Today with Clare Byrne on RTE Radio 1.
Well, the 50th anniversary of Bloody Sunday is coming up this weekend, the 30th of January. 13 people were shot dead and 18 were injured on that day in 1972 in Derry. John Johnston, who was one of those injured, died in June of that year, becoming a 14th victim. The Bloody Sunday inquiry later confirmed that all those targeted had not been armed and posed no threat when shot. Seven of those killed were teenage boys, one of whom, the first victim, was Jackie Duddy, aged 17. Well, I'm joined now in the studio by Julianne Campbell, the niece of Jackie Duddy and the author of a new book called On Bloody Sunday, a collection of personal accounts of the day. Julianne, you're very welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me, Claire.
So when we mark the anniversary of an event, we think about one day, don't we? We think about what happened on that one day 50 years ago. But your book rightly tells us about the 50-year-long impact that that one day has had. Would you agree that it has shaped so many lives?
Definitely. I think it was a turning point in the history of Ireland and Northern Ireland. And it was definitely a catalyst for a lot more trouble.
So, but for the people who went through it, take your own family, for example. Your story changes, doesn't it, when something like this happens to you?
Definitely. I think my own family, there was 15 siblings in my mum's family, and Jackie was one of the younger siblings. And I think they never really got over his death. They never could come to terms with it because it was so brutal and so violent and sudden. And their mammy had just died a year or two earlier from leukemia and left 15 children. So to lose a child then, you know, it really hit the family hard. And I don't think they ever really recovered from losing Jackie.
Well, look, what you've done in the book is you've collected this oral history and you give us a really deep insight into the absolute terror experienced by those people who were there on the day. We're going to take a listen now to one of the first person accounts that you took from those who were in the bogside on the day. We have this voiced up so we can hear it. So I just want to warn people now, there's strong language in this clip. It's not suitable for everyone, particularly maybe younger listeners. But as I said, it is a first hand account of what happened on Bloody Sunday. It's the words of Hugh McMonagall, who has been referred to as one of the unsung heroes of that day.
We saw the young boy and he was just white. Then Mickey Bridge got up and walked out shouting, "You bastards, you shot a Wayne. Shoot me, you bastards." Just at that moment another Saracen came in and swung round and parked facing us sideways. Mickey kept on shouting, "Shoot me, you bastards." And I was calling to him to come on because they would shoot him too. And then another Saracen came in. Mickey kept on shouting. And then he squealed. They'd shot him.
And the young boy he was talking about, that was Jackie, was it?
Yes, it was. It was my Uncle Jackie. And Hugh was one of the men who tried to save him and carry him out of the gunfire on the day.
And what more did you hear about what happened to Jackie and the lead up to it?
I think that was what interested me in Bloody Sunday originally, was what happened. And I wanted to speak to the people who tried to help Jackie. And Basically, he was running away from when that Paris came under the bogside, which nobody was really expecting. And they were running away from the advancing troops. And he was running beside Bishop Daly, who was then Father Daly. And Bishop Daly always remembers him kind of laughing, you know, at the sight of a priest running beside him.
It was like a giggle, wasn't
it? Yeah, you know,
just
like And then he fell forward and Bishop Daly ran on. But when he looked back, Jackie hadn't got up. So then other men came and turned him over and it turned out he was shot. So Jackie was the first person that died, but he wasn't the first person shot, but he was the first person that died on the ground that day.
And that iconic image then is the one that we associate all of the time with what happened on Bloody Sunday, where Father Daly, as he was at the time, as you said there, was coming out waving his handkerchief.
Yeah, he was waving the white hanky and the troops didn't really pay attention to him and they were still aiming at the group. And the white hanky came back from Jackie, from hospital with Jackie's belongings, and we've had it in our family ever since. And so it's a family heirloom now.
And you told Bishop Daly that you still had that, only in the lead up to, in 2016, wasn't it, when he died, and you did the interview with him at that time. But he, I don't think he was aware, was he, that you still had that handkerchief?
Yeah, my aunt brought it to one of the, when he gave evidence to the Savile inquiry, and that was when he realised, he knew it was out there somewhere. But he didn't know that our family had it, and so he said it was rightfully ours.
And he gave you his last interview. about what happened on that day?
He did. I didn't know it was his last interview at the time, and I always wanted to speak to him about it. And on the day he said, "This is the last time I'll ever speak about Bloody Sunday." And I was so privileged that, wow, he was speaking to me about it. Mm-hmm. And then he died a few months later. So I realised that was probably his last recorded interview.
What stood out to you from that interview that you did with him?
The fact that Bishop Daly never, ever got over it either. You know, he always fought the corner of Derry, and the fact that Derry people were telling the truth all these years, and that the army did come in firing, and that there was no IRA firing first. And Bishop Daly was a real strong advocate of the truth, and he was 100% behind the families all those years. And from someone in his position, that really mattered. And so he was very important to the people of Derry from that perspective. He never swayed in his conviction that it was sheer unadulterated murder.
It goes back again to impact, doesn't it? Mm. That point I was making at the start, there's the impact on the day, and we mark the day as we rightly do, you know, every year, and this year it'll be 50 years. But for him, there's another example of a life lived and changed utterly by the events of that day, would you say?
Definitely. And he always kept a framed photograph of my Uncle Jackie on his office.
Did
always.
He?
So I got to see that when I was in his office and not too. And he's since donated it to the Museum of Free Derry and Derry in his will. Mm-hmm. So the photograph of Jackie and the stole that he had on that day, the holy stole that he wore on his neck. So he donated them both together so other people could see them.
And I know for you as well, it was important to do this now because people are going, people are dying, the people who survived that day.
Yeah. Especially like you read from Hugh McMonagle there. Hugh died at Christmas time there and we lost him. And he was the first person I told about the book idea, and he said, "You go for it and you put my story in." So he was actually the first person agreed to be in the book. Mm-hmm. And then he's not here to see it finalised. So we're losing people all the time, the wounded, the families. The last widow of Bloody Sunday just died a few months ago too. So it was nice to find press things that she had said in the past and make sure she was included too. So it gives people a voice where they've been largely silent over the years, and it was an excuse to tie all these voices together and make a wider, more powerful story of it.
How was Hugh talking to you about it almost 50 years after the fact?
He was still quite shaken, even talking about it. And I find that with a lot of interviews, when they're talking about it, it's still raw, like it happened yesterday. And, you know, it can be quite emotional for the person speaking.
I just want to bring people another clip now. We were hearing that you received some chilling real-time accounts that you've just been telling us about, the horror and the panic and the anger and the fear that people have had from that day. And we're going to run through some of the testimonies that you received from people now. Let's take another listen to an experience that we voiced up.
Once we got into the flat, there were so many people in there. Some of them were strangers. We went straight into the bedroom to look out the window, see what was happening out there. Those soldiers were not only firing at the people heading towards the gap in blocks 2 and 3 of the flats. They were also firing at the flats themselves. And it appeared to me that they were firing at us in the window. They were kneeling down and taking proper aim.
Will you talk to me a bit more about that? Because those people felt, they clearly felt that they were safe.
Mm. Well, that was the Roswell flats, which dominated the bogside at the time, and there were high flats. And the army at the time claimed that there was nail bombs thrown from the flats and there was acid bombs thrown, all lies. There was nothing. Nobody was expecting the Paras to come in, so nobody had really prepared for them to come in. So there was no prepared petrol bombs or anything on the day. So that was all part of the cover-up immediately afterwards. But any of the families living in the flats speak about watching from outside and the windows breaking because they were shot at, and people getting glass in their hair and then rubbing the glass and it made their head bleed, and there was blood running down their face, you know, just because glass smashed on them in their own house. So it must have been absolutely terrifying. When
also
you were
seeing the as we heard there in that clip, seeing the soldiers kneeling down and taking aim. That was the experience. Who told you about that?
Several different people. Everyone has the same story. Mm-hmm. But the fact is that nobody believed what Derry was saying for all those years. So it's a great vindication to the people of Derry that now they know that the world knows that they were telling the truth all these years.
And you were also told that someone asked for help from one of the soldiers, and what they got in response was the soldier started to clap.
That's Hugh McMonagle again, and it was about my Uncle Jackie, and Jackie was actually dying on the ground.
And he was saying, "Please help me, this boy is dying."
Yeah,
and that was the response.
Yeah. And he said he'll never forget the sound of that clapping.
Was that echoed by others, that type of response when they sought
help? Definitely. And there was verbal abuse and physical abuse and intimidation. You know, people were treated so badly, like they were the enemy. And they weren't. They were just ordinary folk on a march.
And Julianne, will you tell me the story of Peggy Deary?
Peggy was the only woman shot on Bloody Sunday. She was the only woman injured. Another woman was crushed by a Saracen. But she was the only woman shot, and it almost severed her leg. She had 14, I think, children. And she was recently widowed. And she just begged for her life off the soldier. You know, please don't kill me. I'm a widow and I have 14 children. And it affected her whole life, and she had to have a caliper fitted afterwards, according to the local stories. You know, I never met her. She died in 1988, I think.
Mm-hmm. So how did she get to safety then once she was shot?
She was carried to safety by a few young men, one of which, it came in the interviews and in the witness testimony I've used, it transpired that it was Michael Kelly that was one of the men carried her. And Michael Kelly was shot shortly afterwards, and they said he was a nail bomber. And she said, I know him. He hangs around with my son. He is no gunman. So it was really interesting to make those connections as well between the stories and the eyewitness testimonies.
So he helped carry her to safety. Did he then go back outside, or what happened?
I think he was making his way over the bog side to safety, over past the rubble barricade. And there was four young men shot around that area.
Mm-hmm. And while she was in and had managed to get to safety, did soldiers come into where she was then?
Yes. And that was very interesting for me to read, because I hadn't read that before. And it was soldiers raided the house that she was in, and they said let the whore bleed to death, and mm-hmm. things like that, mm-hmm. and blamed the people in the house, and they were really violent with everyone in the house, and there was absolutely no compassion shown.
So moving on then, I know you've been involved in this project. It is your life. I mean, you've lived this story, but you've also worked professionally on it, Julianne, for many years. And there was much jubilation, wasn't there, about the findings of the Savile Tribunal in 2010 then. What did it mean to you, your family then, for the public apology to be given by the Prime Minister, David Cameron, at the time?
It was a great day of relief for the people of Derry. My Auntie Kay, who was the campaigner of the family, she always says you could see the cloud lifting from the city. And there was 10,000 people on the streets waiting for the families to come out of the Guildhall and hopeful of a good report, you know, that it was favourable towards Derry and towards the truth. And thank God it was. It wasn't the whole truth, because it blamed soldiers and didn't go any higher up. But it was more than any other families have got. And I'm really thankful for it, but it was a real changing point for Derry that, again, it was vindication for our people. That
do you still have that sense of vindication now? Because it's 12 years ago.
Yeah. Well, I would have thought things would have moved faster after Savile, that if our people are innocent, then who was guilty? But it was sort of was largely brushed under the carpet, and the police investigation that we did have wasn't really satisfactory when it said that only one soldier was being prosecuted. And of course, that case has nearly fallen apart now, and it's with the High Court to see if we can try it. So some families want prosecutions, some don't, you know, but the rule of law certainly should apply.
And I know this weekend will be one of commemorations for your own family, though it'll be more muted because you've had a recent bereavement, haven't you?
Yes, my brother died a few months ago just. So
I'm so sorry to hear that.
Thank you. So when I'm talking about all this now, I feel more of a sense of how they were feeling, because now I know what it's like to lose a brother. So yeah. I think it gives it an added resonance.
And, yeah, so it's a very it's a tough time for your family and for your mother in particular as well. Images emerged during the week of paratroopers' flags being erected in areas around Northern Ireland in the lead up to the anniversary.
Mm.
How does that impact you? What's your reaction to that?
I just think it's provocation, really. It's trying to antagonise not just the families, but the nationalist Catholic population of Derry. It's just trying to annoy people. You know, it's not representative of the Unionist or Protestant community in Derry. It's really not. It's a few people that put these flags up, mm-hmm. and they're not representative of any community.
So from what I see and what I hear as you respond to that, it doesn't have a profound impact, or does it?
I think years ago when I was a news reporter, we used to cover it every year, you know, get the para flags down. But over the years then, the families thought, what's the point in fighting it? They're going to do it anyway. So it's not really, it doesn't really make the press. It happens every year. But it doesn't really make the press anymore. It made the press this year because it's the 50th, and it really is just a slap in the face, you know, mm-hmm. that new flags have gone up this week whenever people are talking about 50 years since a local massacre.
And what do you hope the book will achieve on Bloody Sunday?
I hope that it gets to a wider audience, the things that we always knew and took for granted, but other people were sort of spoon-fed the truth, and especially in terms of English audiences or even the Southern audiences, that there was a lot of media blackout and a lot of things that weren't told. And so it's great to get the human truth out there and the human stories behind it, and not just the headlines.
So you feel that this tells this from every angle, from the people who were there on that civil rights march on that day, and then beyond, the impacts that flowed from that.
Definitely, and it takes us up to the present day. And I think that's a really stark part of the book, is that after the horrifying story that you read, and then you think, and the families got nowhere. You know, in terms of the rule of law, at the end, Johnson's government said, we're drawing a line under all the Troubles cases, which is not just Bloody Sunday, that's everything. And so the British government still don't care. And that's a real kick for people.
All right. Well, we wish you well with the book and over the weekend as well, because I know it won't be easy for your family for a number of reasons. Julianne Campbell's book, On Bloody Sunday, is published by Monterey, and it's out now. Julianne, thank you very much.
Thank you.